were getting on to the 50-year-old mystery that was cracked by Mina and co-authors about the measles vaccine. So to me, after reading this so many times and reading every single reference, the mystery is how they got away with the study design and the jury-rigged data and the flawed immunology to support their three hypotheses. Mina and his colleagues have supposedly been using computer models and medical records, as you can see here, to figure out what happened. But funny that there's no mention of medical records at all in that science paper or in the supplementary data, which I also have. And it would have been really great if real children's real clinical medical records from way back, or even from more recently, had formed any part of the confirmatory basis for their hypothesis. But that didn't happen. While the article admits that the conclusions are a hypothesis, the results were presented as a revolutionary, mathematically revealed discovery, which has solved some long-standing mystery upon which action should be taken. I read through these articles wondering why the world's expert on measles never noticed this phenomenon before, particularly if measles infection also wiped out any immunity gained from vaccines or from natural immunity before the vaccines were marketed. I couldn't understand why it was that the messages from lay media to parents and doctors didn't really discuss the study, but used the flawed conclusions as a direct attack against vaccine-hesitant parents. The answer became clear after looking closely at the track records of another author called Osterhaus. And his name on this paper is a big red flag. Osterhaus is a veterinarian who wears many hats, one of which is an organization called MUGAS, MUGAS, which was set up to fund a supposedly independent review of the anti-flu medication Tamiflu. So why are we talking about Tamiflu? Because Osterhaus, who is a veterinarian, has made his niche in animal flu and related infections. Because Osterhaus has been trying to frighten the public over impending animal flu into humans for years. He's currently known as Dr. Flu, or the swine flu pope, in his home country, the Netherlands. His doctoral thesis was on peritonitis in cats. Now, I'm often criticized for being a nephrologist who criticizes vaccines. But this man is a veterinarian and doesn't even have a license to practice medicine on humans, yet he's in position to set world policy regarding vaccination to humans. He's also been criticized for what has been described as a fear campaign, calling for far-reaching measures to combat the 2009 flu pandemic. In an opinion piece, physician and microbiologist Miguel Ekelenkamp called Osterhaus a scaremonger. And he said, quote, "Expert Osterhaus should be banned indefinitely from television. Everything he claimed turned out to be untrue. We're not all going to die like we did in 1918. Not everyone needs a vaccination. We are not going to give Tamiflu to everyone, and the virus has not mutated into something much more dangerous." Osterhaus was also criticized in this Science Journal article by Martin Enserink in 2009. Now remember, this is the same journal that just printed this one that I'm putting around. The article here, looking more closely, quotes a Dr. Luc Bonneau calling Osterhaus a fearmonger, and also saying that an alpha male like Osterhaus is going to dominate all of the committees. Osterhaus was described as the alpha male. There was so much upheaval in the media over Osterhaus's behavior that health officials were concerned it would have an anti-vaccination effect on HPV vaccines. Note that this is the same journal that published Mina and Osterhaus that I just put around. So remember the name Martin Enserink, okay? Because that's going to become important also. Remember how Miguel Ekelenkamp mentioned Tamiflu? That's because Osterhaus also pushed Tamiflu, not just vaccines. And there's a reason for that. Dr. Tom Jefferson of the Cochrane Collaboration, who has come out against the influenza vaccine research and the comprehensive nature of it, he considered Tamiflu ineffective and published a statement saying that what was needed was total transparency with all of Roche, the manufacturer of Tamiflu's, data provided to the Cochrane Collaboration, which is an independent peer review collaborative effort. Roche took another route to keep its drug Tamiflu squeaky clean, and they partnered with Professor Ab Osterhaus, who formed MUGAS, and then reported that Cochrane declined their invitation to participate in the workshop. So Osterhaus found an innocuous-looking business partner, and Roche provided the money to set up MUGAS. But Osterhaus seems to never be short of an opinion or three, and he made it clear from the start that MUGAS's mission statement is to counter anti-vaccine lobbies, because according to MUGAS, which stands for Multi-Parity Group for Advice on Science, we always cause confusion. But you ask, what does MUGAS have to do with the media? Well, notice here, I'm just going to read this to you. He said, you know, these are just clips that I took right off of the website. Whenever the public health debate suffers from a multitude of conflicting messages, studies, and conclusions, MUGAS Foundation can help by performing an independent overall review or analysis of all available scientific literature and data. And he says that anti-vaccination lobbies deliberately misconstrue information to suit their own needs. So as far as what they have to do with the media, Osterhaus is co-author with Mina, okay? And I looked carefully at MUGAS' partnerships. And this particular page hit me right between the eyes. MUGAS' multidisciplinary team. Remember Martin Enzerink from Science? He's the European editor of the journal. He criticized Osterhaus in 2009, as you saw. And then he was brought into the team at MUGAS by 2013. We also have here Deborah McKenzie, you remember her, who broke the story in The New Scientist with a stinging rebuke to the anti-vaccine movement. Well, there are parts of MUGAS's members of the press multidisciplinary team. Deborah McKenzie quoted her boss, Osterhaus, and pushed the aims of MUGAS in her writing. So it should be very clear and obvious now that this is a web of conflicted interests, all with the same aim: to beat up parents and health professionals who dare to question the huge money-making holy grail. Because of course, we're all causing massive confusion. But it's hard to trust what we read, seeing that MUGAS is here primarily for the pharmaceutical companies, who can turn to MUGAS with any question that requires an independent review and analysis of existing research. Osterhaus has well-known and deep ties to the pharmaceutical industry and to the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization now receives more money from the pharmaceutical industry and private industry than it does from governments. Osterhaus is a man on a mission. And as far as his MUGAS is concerned, they have an obligation to join forces with journalists and anyone else who could be useful to determine public opinion. When only one side of the story is heard and often repeated, it will determine the public opinion. When that side of the story appears to be wrong, the scientific community has the moral obligation to join forces and to counter misleading messages with better data and stronger analyses. They're here to settle the scientific debate. Here is MUGAS' media partner, Deborah McKenzie again, reporting about Mina's article in The New Scientist. The voice behind her is obviously Osterhaus, who again identifies his target, the anti-vaccination movement, right here. You saw another Osterhaus comment directed at the anti-vaccine in a previous slide. The message to the public wasn't just about a newly discovered terrible effect of measles. It was about hitting up Osterhaus's favorite target, the non-vaccinating parents. Even in the medical article published in Science, the article starts and finished, as you can see in the article I put around, with non-vaccinators in mind. The last sentence is really interesting, and I've clipped out the beginning and the end of that article. And it reads, quote, "Our findings help dispel the mystery surrounding the disproportionately large reductions in mortality seen after the introduction of the measles vaccination." This is just a mathematically synthesized construct. It's opinion. It's not fact. There was no disproportionate decrease in mortality after the introduction of measles vaccines to high-income countries. Not from measles and not from any other type of infection. And proof of that is found in core infectious disease textbooks used by medical schools, such as this one by Nelson, 2005. See the bottom line here? That is infectious disease deaths. Look at it after 1950. And you can see that there is almost no progress of decline in infectious disease deaths. Here's where the vaccine for measles in America came in. Now compare that to the disproportionate fall in deaths that happened beforehand. That first measles vaccine was used in America in 1963. Look how all deaths decreased independently of antibiotics or vaccines. Influenza and pneumonia in 1900, 202 per 100,000 died. By 1935, there was no influenza vaccine. We're down by half. By 1970, when there was a very poor vaccine only given to a small amount of the population, we're down further. Tuberculosis, almost gone by 1970. We never used BCG vaccine in America. Gastroenteritis, almost gone by 1970. There's no gastroenteritis vaccine. Now, today there's rotavirus, but there wasn't then. Typhoid fever, it's gone. There was no typhoid fever vaccine in America. Measles, 13.3 mortality rate per 100,000, which is very low compared to these other diseases. By 1935, we're down to 3.1. By 1970, we're down to zero. Dysentery, whooping cough, scarlet fever, meningitis, it's all the same. The trends were clearly going down before the vaccines. So I wonder why so many people are unaware of tables like this from medical textbooks that show the decline in death before the wide use of vaccines. Why are parents expected to believe that Mina's findings dispel a mystery which doesn't even exist? This kind of information is what is written in Dissolving Illusions, is not considered essential concepts by people whose writing excludes honesty, because policy is always more important. Everything I talk about today are the concepts that you're not supposed to know. When Osterhaus talks about determining public opinion, he's really talking about removing from your knowledge everything the medical system considers to be non-essential concepts. This is nothing new, as you can see from this pediatrics article from 1996, where so-called parent comprehension is discussed, but where parental behavior objectives and the desired health behavior are the real endpoints. And I'm just going to read this important part to you. Current materials contain an excessive amount of information that most patients do not find useful. The number of concepts per pamphlet should be limited. Pamphlet authors should determine the key points that the patient or parent needs to know to achieve the behavioral objective. Not in order to be healthy or to have a full understanding, but to achieve the behavioral objective. Non-essential concepts can then be deleted. The key is to write for the desired health behavior rather than for high-level knowledge. All right? That's what they think of you. But for you, the concepts I'm talking about today are the ones that put everything into its correct perspective. Osterhaus is trying to get parents to conform. One of the reasons this talk is called manufactured consent is the information they give you is manufactured, carefully crafted, and put together to create a picture in your mind to make you scared. That's done by leaving out the high-level knowledge, which would counterbalance their fear-mongering. What they consider non-essential concepts are the ones that change the whole equation in favor of not vaccinating. By taking out that high-level knowledge, or what they consider non-essential concepts, they get you to do what they want you to do. And this is what Mugas, Osterhaus, and Mina are trying to do. They are rewriting history to change your perception, to alter your emotions. That could lead you to vaccinate out of fear. Popular press is altering peer pressure so that vaccinating parents will verbally abuse and ostracize non-vaccinators. It's medieval behavior, and it's ramped up through the internet. In an attempt to get to the bottom of the math, I started discussing this paper with both pro-vaccine people and people on the fence. And there were some lively discussions, and one of them was particularly fruitful. In an email to a friend of mine, Mina said this: "While mortality was very high at the earlier years in our study, for example, about 13 in 100,000, it dropped to about 4 per 100,000 after vaccination." So this simply put words to what we already see in the study. And the graph might look like a landslide if you just look at this here, but the difference between those two red lines is only 9 per 100,000. And Mina admitted to hunting for a needle in a haystack. But the problem I have is that the needle actually doesn't exist. He goes on to say, "Now, while this is a 70% reduction in mortality, from an absolute numbers point of view, it's only 9 per 100,000. In my opinion, it's not difficult to consider that for every 16,000 individuals with possible immune amnesia, a small fraction may have been at the extreme side of things, resulting in an average 9 deaths as a consequence. Measles was much more common than overall deaths. And thus, it would be the rare individual who A, died, only 4 to 14 per 100,000, and B, had that death subsequently linked to a measles infection 2 years prior." This is all assumption from a study that didn't originally get the results they wanted from their data, so they changed the assumptions to get their new theory. To attribute 9 deaths to post-measles immune suppression is like stretching a rubber band to infinity. And even if a doctor had, say, 30,000 children in their medical practice, they may never have seen a patient that died from theoretical post-measles immune suppression. Looked at from the real-world perspective and undoctored data, there was never an existing mystery to solve. But even more interesting is the Danish data section of Mina's study that I passed around. Look at what he says was a problem. He said, quote, "Because measles vaccine introduction in Denmark in 1987 occurred as data became available, we were compelled to focus on the 2 decades that followed the logarithmic reduction of cases, 1990 to 2010. What Mina is saying is that because of the lack of measles incidence data before the vaccine was introduced, they had to analyze the data in the 20 years after vaccination in order to determine what happened in the 20 years before vaccination. Thank you. He put a link in the paper to the Danish data, which started from 1981. But if he had bothered to look on the same website where he got his limited data, he would have found this graph, which would have told him that Denmark's measles case data goes back actually to 1862, and that his data was incomplete, so he should have requested more. My friend sent Mina the earlier data and this graph, and he asked why he didn't include it in his analysis, and then Mina went silent and didn't return any of his emails. There actually were no data limitations. He could have had all the data he wanted. He could have also done what Roman and I did with the help of some Danish people here, which was a quick PubMed search, which came up with Melker in 2001, which had this graph on the right. Now, if you look at that red square, that's where I have superimposed onto Melker's graph Mina's limited data from Denmark part, which you can also see, this is from Mina's paper on the left. So for the purpose of Mina's hypothesis, it might have been better for him to have data limitations to generate the results that he was seeking. If Mina had gone from 1976, like Melker did here, he could have had all this data, or better yet, if he used the data from 1957, like we did, to make our new graphs, might his calculations have panned out differently? Here it is again, our new graphs that Roman put together from the data that our friends here got. On non-measles deaths in children from Denmark plotted against the measles incidence. Mina could have done his fancy gamma magic on this data, but he chose not to. He started where the arrow is instead. The data was all there. Mina cherry-picked Denmark's data to manufacture the emperor's new clothes, which was the so-called 50-year-old mystery of the 3-year deadly measles shadow. Now I see that we have coffee delivered, so we can take a short break, and there's just a little bit left, and then we'll go for questions and answers. Good? Okay.